You're listening to I Got That One,
presented by Tom Anyone. Are we at the semi-finals yet?
Not quite.
Okay.
Just a few more to go. Now, I feel like there's always one team every season where we expect such amazing things because they have a very strong start, and then they got knocked out after two losses in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, like last year with
Birkbeck. This time it's with Trinity. So I think it just goes to show that we know literally nothing about this show that we love so much.
I mean, and yet we're here making this podcast, and yet we make these predictions.
Hey, you know, it just goes to show there's an extremely low barrier to entry when it comes to podcasting.
Nothing can stop us now.
Exactly.
This podcast train is gone. It's left the station.
Toot, toot. See, this is what happens when you enable two randoms on the internet.
Yeah, next up, wrong predictions again.
Woo! Can't wait until next season where we completely mess it up once more.
Going back full circle. It's a circular ride, this one.
Yes, as is this conversation, apparently.
Okay.
What?
Anyway, podcast about University Challenge, still quarterfinals, so I know.
This week we saw St. John's versus Trinity, both Cambridge colleges.
A Cambridge derby. This is, it's not often that you get one of these. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm pretty sure that the way that the show is set up is that the producers don't let Oxford or Cambridge colleges compete with each other during the first round or the second round.
Yeah.
To kind of, you know, limit it until there's really no other option, which is what we had here, because remember, St. John's were knocked into the position by Emmanuel.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that because we have had so many Cambridge colleges this time, that inevitably they just have to have a face-off.
Indeed. Although, yeah, there is a good chance that we might get no Cambridge colleges because Trinity are out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, St. John's and Emmanuel both need to win whichever match they have next because, which would be interesting. Because usually you have at least one Oxbridge team getting through to the semifinals.
Yeah, I mean, I think there will be one at least. But then, of course, we have Imperial. We've got other colleges that are very, very strong too.
Imperial and Edinburgh are the two main ones right now. Where I do not envy whichever team comes up against those two.
I know.
Yeah, we've seen them just absolutely wreck shop.
I mean, I don't envy those teams, but I'm excited for us. That's going to be excellent television, I think.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, enough bandying about beating about the bush. Let's get into the performances. And I will say one thing I will miss is just how stylish Innes is.
Oh, yes.
She brings a level of class to this series that was kind of lacking, I think, in a lot of other teams.
Way to throw some shade on some of the other contestants.
There's no shade. It's just, you know, I'm talking about a comparative thing. You know, everyone else is dressed nicely.
Fine. I think we're skipping way ahead into our best dress, Tom. You might have just dropped a spoiler there.
Hey, come on.
You
know, I'm just saying, just kind of like, you know, the one time where we had the Courtauld Institute.
That was great.
Where it was just a solid lineup where it was just, oh my God.
Yeah, fierce looks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, other than that,
you know, Trinity, even though they lost, I feel like they put in a very good performance.
Yeah.
It's just that, unfortunately, they weren't quite as fast on the buzzer as the St. John's team were.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there were quite a few bonuses that they missed also that actually they were kicking themselves about after. I think there were some good bonuses that went to St. John that I think Trinity would have done well on, but alas, the cards didn't fall that way.
Yeah, and I think maybe also inversely, there were some bonuses that St. John's definitely struggled with that maybe would have seen Trinity do a little bit better in.
I think so. Like there's a physics bonus, for example, a few others,
But having said that, I feel like they were a very strong team. You know, they were consistently conferring well with very little wasted time. I think Bricker did a very good job as a captain, kind of keeping everyone tight in.
Yeah, I think especially near the end as well, kind of rallying everyone to go try to get those extra few points to push them to victory. So I saw that for sure.
Absolutely. And whilst Kim maybe was not as dominant as he was in the first and second round, we could see kind of hints of how dangerous he is, especially in the last few minutes.
Yeah.
When he was starting to hit his stride and really starting to kind of get more into his wheelhouse of questions. Yeah. But definitely near the beginning, it felt a little bit like, I don't know, something wasn't quite gelling how he was.
Like a bit of a slow start for Trinity.
Yeah, which is unfortunate because that, you know, I don't think tells the full story of what we've seen this team do.
No.
Because we've seen them be, you know, very, very impressive.
Yeah, I think we had predicted them to go quite far into the semis even.
Absolutely. Well, you know, sometimes that happens.
Yeah.
Now, with regards to St. John's, They're a team where I feel like they've not been super consistent.
Well, I don't know. I feel like they were very strong initially.
Mm.
And then now there's a few other teams that are potentially stronger and have struck a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I still feel like St. John's is a really kind of reliable, solid team. You know,
so we have two very different opinions.
Yeah, I feel like they do well. They always get above a certain number. And they've not exactly had a poor performance. It's just that I think the competition is heating up and they just have to step up a little bit more.
I know what you're saying, and I agree to a certain extent. What I mean to say by inconsistent is that sometimes it feels like they're a little bit kind of slapdash in their approach. They buzz in a little bit too early, take a little bit too long to confer.
Okay.
And then you have a follow-up where suddenly they are much more kind of focused and, you know, really working well together and gelling very well.
Yeah, I see what you mean there.
So, because I feel like in their match against Emmanuel, we saw a bit more of the kind of, you know, not quite as tightly gelled together as normal, which is what we saw in the first round when they played against Imperial. But then, you know, in the best scoring losers in the second round and in this one, we saw a much more kind of focused approach from the St. John's team. Yeah. It's just what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm not saying in that, you know, they're great one time and not so good the next. I'm just saying that the performance sometimes doesn't quite catch on or takes a bit longer to warm up in some of the matches they play. Whereas, you know, if you look at, for example, Emmanuel, where we saw, you know, maybe not the best beginning, but started ratcheting up in terms of consistency.
I suppose in that sense, we've not seen an improvement necessarily. But yeah, I still feel like they are someone that I know, no matter what, will do well.
Yeah, they're always going to score well.
It depends on their competitors sometimes. And with some of the competitors that we're seeing now, some very strong teams, some very risky, fast buzzers. They're going to need to step it out a little bit more, I think, to really soar into the semis.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like there's a lot of room to improve anyway. They've always been a very strong team, regardless of, you know, how the final scores have shaped up. It's just that, you know, their very first match was against what is now the favorite team to win.
Mm.
So, of course, you know, when you compare against that, you know, it's going to be tough either way. So, I don't know. I'm just not sure about the St. John's team. They keep on kind of taking me by surprise every time I see them play.
Yeah.
Is just kind of the impression I get.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, it's fair enough.
Much.
Well, they have one more chance.
They have one more chance.
To impress you, Tom.
Yeah, and it depends on who they get drawn against. We'll see whether they'll get one final chance to prove themselves or if the matchup is not going
to
quite...
Well, I like them, so I hope to see them go through.
No, I really like them as well.
So any favourite questions?
Yes, it's time to talk about these questions. There were two questions which were very similar in terms of style, which were 1982 in literature and 1981 in international events.
Indeed, yes.
So you really get the impression that the early 80s, there was a lot happening.
Mm-hmm.
But in a sense that in 1981, there were a lot of big world-shaking events.
Yeah.
So you had the release of the Iran hostages. You had the attempts on Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
You have these kind of big events. You know, the attempted military junta in Spain, which thankfully didn't come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
And the next year, you have these really interesting literary works
coming out of
the States. Especially, I think, a lot of black literature going on.
Yeah, I mean, these were separate questions, but you can kind of see a through line through those.
Yeah, and you kind of just get a sense that, you know, often, you know, big events inspire interesting literary movements.
Oh, for sure. I mean, after World War II, we had the rise of absurd theatre.
Exactly.
Just people talking about, writing about the absurdity of war, the emptiness of war. So yeah, absolutely.
Likewise, we saw some truly interesting literature during the Regency period when we had, you know, on the throne of England, a guy who was literally unfit to rule because he was, you know, suffering from porphyria and was having hallucinations.
Oh my goodness.
So, you know, we have a lot of fantastic stuff came from the early 80s,
1800s. Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, it's I just found it fascinating.
That's a really interesting link there that you drew.
Yeah, sometimes there are links between the different bonuses. Another one I liked was the protected shipwrecks, because there's something...
Yeah, I like that one too.
I know, romantic, which is a very kind of bleak way of talking about it.
No, I was thinking the same as well. These, how shipwrecks are studied and the stories that they tell, the things that they find, what they say about their captains, the people that were on them. I can understand that. It is very romantic in a certain way. It's an interesting way to understand our history, voyages, travel, connections between countries. So yeah, I get where you're coming from.
No, that tells some amazing things. For example, one of the answers was the Mary Rose, which is fascinating because it was the flagship. It was freshly launched and it capsized because they did a full turn while all the gun ports were open and all the sea came in and it sank. Very embarrassing. But there were a lot of really interesting things on board because it was a full crew.
Yeah.
So we saw stuff about how the Tudors entertained themselves, especially the common folk.
Oh, yeah. Stuff that we don't really hear about.
Yeah, because often, especially back in the day, we'd mainly learn about what the nobility were doing because, of course, they preserved that. They had the money to pay for people to write about the stuff they did.
Yeah.
Whereas the common folk, you very rarely heard about it because, you know, it's so common, no one's going to really tell you very much. For example, a common philosophical question is about how would you describe a horse?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're so ubiquitous in so many cultures, you never have someone describing what a horse looks like
mm-hmm.
in any explicit detail because every culture knows what a horse looks like for the most part.
Yeah, okay, that's really interesting.
But then if from the scant kind of ways we've described it, if you try to just draw it from those descriptions, it looks nothing like a horse.
I'm just thinking about their meme of the horse.
Oh, yeah. That's you used know, to... Yeah, starting off very well and then just ending in just really a crude outline. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very similar, but just an actual kind of, I guess, biological description.
Oh,
maybe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I just had flashbacks to something I was taught when I was 9.
Yeah.
From that question.
I mean, maybe similarly, there was a question also on volcanoes.
Mm.
And the way the question was asked was it linked to historical events, to Greek poets, you know, so to things that shaped history in a way that people wrote about.
Absolutely.
So I thought that was pretty interesting too.
Yeah. I also thought, I mean, maybe it's an interesting time to choose this kind of question, but diseases and vectors.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we are still at time of recording and probably for quite some time still in the middle of a pandemic situation.
Yeah.
But it's just important to remember there are a lot of really horrible diseases out there and, you know, they can do really horrific things and, you know.
Yeah. And then I think it also goes to say how much a lot of people, you know, we are privileged to be protected from a lot of these diseases because of good healthcare systems and so on, but others are not.
Yeah, a lot of these are preventative, you know. Some are, you know, parasitic born, so,
yeah.
You know, anti-parasitics are very important, especially when you're raising livestock. Some of these are, you know, microbes, so, you know, good antibacterial stuff where you're not, you know, over-prescribing antibiotics or just stick it in everything.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, effective vector control of flies and mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm. Or just, you know, mosquito nets. Simple technologies like that.
Remember, malaria used to be endemic to Italy.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't exist there anymore because we got rid of the vector-bearing mosquitoes there.
Yeah,
probably do that in other parts of the world if we, you know, wanted to.
I think when it comes to with dengue fever in a lot of Asian countries, I think what they do is they release female mosquitoes to breed or something like that.
Or is it male? Because I know for the
probably male.
For the malaria mosquito, the male mosquito doesn't draw any blood. They exclusively have plant-based diets.
Yeah, so all these really interesting ways in which such diseases have been controlled. Largely, yeah.
Well, also in Singapore, they knock on your doors and check to make sure you have no standing water on your house.
Government surveillance helps.
Yes.
Anyway.
I remember making an interesting visit from one of those men when we were there.
Yeah.
Anyhow, another one I liked is the one about collaborative fiction because I feel like this is something which is not celebrated as much. I mentioned last week where we love talking about the auteur film director, but often we do the same when it comes to writers.
Yeah.
And we tend to say, oh, they have this brilliant mind and they must just write beautiful prose. A lot of it is sometimes editors will, you know, take this kind of big mess and turn it into something that's, you know, readable.
Reasonable,
you know,
yeah.
I think I've talked about before where, you know, the biggest eye-opener for me in that regard was T.S. Eliot looking at what his editor wrote to him in the margins. Often, what's this? This is stupid. Get rid of this. Rewrite this. It's just...
That's what my teacher said.
Yeah, I know. It was giving me flashback. Oh, you know, one of the greatest poetic minds of the early 20th century was talked down to like that.
I know.
So what does it say about me?
Fantastic.
Yeah. And also, I really liked the one about the interrobang.
Okay, I didn't understand that one.
Well, basically, it's just the first time I think the interrobang was suggested for a particular sentence.
Oh,
so the kind of creation of the interrobang.
Fascinating.
And it's just great to hear Paxman go, what?
Yeah.
In a way which I feel like he's been wanting to say for a long time.
What sentence was that again?
What? A refrigerator that makes its own ice cubes.
Okay.
Exactly. And I'd like to talk about the two picture rounds.
Yeah, I did like the picture round with the prince with birds and flowers.
It was so zen.
That was really nice. Yeah, I really enjoyed just kind of staring into those pictures.
Because, I mean, yeah, St. John's unfortunately didn't do particularly well with it because I guess some of these birds, unless you really know your ornithology, you're just not going to know, for example, miners.
Miners, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or swift tails. was, I think the other one was. Yeah. But it's just, they're such wonderful prints. I really like that kind of Japanese art,
yeah,
where
for sure.
It really just kind of distills down certain set essences of nature to its just more most kind of principal parts. So the flower and the bird,
yeah,
none of the noise in the background. It's just really focused.
Yeah,
I really like that.
Very relaxing, very calming for sure.
Yeah. Opposite of calming is thinking about how deep some of these lakes in the world are, which is the first picture around.
Yeah, how frightening.
Yeah, one where it's 1600 meters deep.
I know.
How is that possible? That is unbelievable.
I know.
And also it's interesting to see that often the deepest lake is not the biggest in terms of, you know,
with
square meters. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Great Slave Lake is much smaller than Lake Superior, for example, but is, you know, significantly deeper.
Deeper, that's frightening to think of.
Yeah, or Lake Erie, the Great Lakes regions, or the one in South America, St. Martin.
Makes me think of some great wide lakes that are probably really shallow.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. For example, you know, Loch Ness is famous for, you know, Loch Ness Monster. It's not the deepest loch, as far as I'm aware. It's actually relatively not that deep by Scottish loch standards, which I find fascinating. Or, for example, the North Sea is actually quite shallow.
Okay, well, I didn't know that.
Well, remember, there used to be a land bridge between the UK and the rest of Europe during the Ice Age, so
it had to have been quite shallow.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the deepest point is like 100 metres, but often it's, you know, 20, 30 metres deep.
Yeah.
It's quite high up, I have to say.
Yeah, all right. Well, I think it's time to move into some stats.
Indeed. So, Mr. UC Stats, what did you bring us this week?
So, yeah, it's very clear that St. John's did better overall.
Mm.
Well, actually, interesting. Both teams got the same number of starter questions, 8 apiece.
Really?
Yeah, but then when it came to bonuses, that's where you see St. John's do slightly better.
Mm-hmm.
So 15 out of 24 bonuses compared to Trinity's 10 out of 21.
Okay, so Trinity got slightly below 50% from what I'm hearing.
Yeah, so Trinity got about 47 of their starters correct and 47% of their bonuses, whereas St. John's managed 50% of their starters, but 62% of their bonuses.
62% is pretty good, and that's kind of the ballpark figure we've said before.
Exactly. So for bonuses, I think St. John's definitely in that ballpark, but then when it comes to starter questions with 50, I think it's still kind of in the middle range right now. We've seen some of the other teams really crack 60% on starters and bonuses. So I think if St. John wants to make it into the semifinals and into the finals, then they have to really work on that.
Absolutely. And there were quite a few questions when another team got an answer.
I noticed
that happened quite
a
few times, which sometimes happens. And it just goes to show that, you know, just because you go to a Cambridge college doesn't necessarily mean you are necessarily smarter than everyone else in the other university.
Yeah, well, that's one way to put it.
Well, I mean, this is just an important point to make because I feel like a lot of people add a lot of unnecessary weights to Oxford and Cambridge teams when...
No, that's fair.
You know, some of the smartest people I know never even applied to those places because they wanted to go somewhere where their degree program better fit what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
Also, I think what was interesting was at the very beginning of this episode, Paxman highlighted that you will lose points if you...
If you buzz in incorrectly. Do you make an interruption as well,
So, I feel like this was probably recorded after the match between Edinburgh and Emmanuel.
Possible, yeah.
Because I feel like he might have been a little bit fed up with all these incorrect interruptions.
Yeah.
So, it was just funny that he said, I want to reiterate. It's like, I'm sure everyone knows this thing, Paxman.
Sometimes he says the rules, sometimes he doesn't. You know, he just does what he likes.
Yeah, I mean, hey... He's in the chair and he's asking the questions.
He's totally in his rights to do that.
Absolutely.
All right.
So, any final thoughts before we move on?
Nope. I think we're excited now to go into our best dressed segment.
Absolutely. So, we once again did an online Twitter poll, and this time it was pretty definitive.
Yeah.
What everyone thought was best dressed.
Yeah.
And I think I kind of... You know, showed our hand a bit early by kind of talking about it in the beginning.
Yeah, so our vote also goes to Ines.
Because, yeah, I mean, she was dressed like she was going to a cocktail party.
I think it's also her hair. It's this shiny red hair, and she had this sparkly eyeshadow going on. The very nice kind of top, orangey.
Yeah, and I think she's had a bit of a tan as well.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, just in general, she just was bringing a plus tier dress to the game.
Impressive considering these were recorded when? Late last year?
It's very hard to tell how long ago this was recorded. Yeah. We should ask one of the people who took part in University Challenge, please set us straight. When were these recorded?
Yeah.
Just kind of give us a ballpark idea of how long ago this was between, you know, date of broadcast and date of recording.
Yeah, but other than that, very well done, Ines.
Very well done. But of course, we have to mention the runners-up.
Yeah.
We both thought that Clark and Ouyang were, you know...
Yeah, yeah. Ouyang, definitely bringing their classy, game. Classy as always. Clark had a really lovely knitwear going on. I thought Brekke's knitwear, as usual, also very nice.
Yeah, I mean, Brekke is really bringing that Norwegian knitwear style. And yeah. That's two style icons we're going to be losing with their exit this time around. It's unfortunate.
They were a good team, but there we go.
Yeah, absolutely. And it happens sometimes. You know, you could have a really stormy performance in the first round and the second round, and then something happens. Who knows? It could just be that, you know, luck of the draw in the people you're playing beforehand. It's just impossible to tell sometimes.
Yeah, we'll miss also Kim's disarming smile.
Yes, the smile
as he destroyed the competition.
Yeah, as he eviscerates you with just the most pleasing smile.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate. But well done, St. John's. You have one more chance to stick in, and we'll see who you play next time. But until then, it is time for us to leave. Thank you so much for listening, as always, to our rambling ponderances. But if you want to talk to us about all this stuff, please come find us on our socials.
Yes, so you can drop us an email at igtopodcast@gmail.com, and we're even on Twitter as I Got That One.
Indeed, thank you so much. But until next time, it is goodbye from me.
And goodbye from you.